Welcome to the Northern Nerd Podcast. We're glad you could join us today. The Northern Nerd is the Northwoods entertainment, media, and creative hub. Each show includes different guests that come from all walks of life with stories to share. Enjoy our latest episode. If you like the Northern Nerd Podcast and other things created by the Northern Nerd, please consider supporting us by going to our online store at www.thenorthernnerd.com/online store. And there you're going to find our hats, our coffee mugs, our t-shirts, and not just stuff with our logos on them, but other things with the Northwoods in mind. If you go there right now and you go to checkout and you type in promo code podcast as you're checking out, you're going to get 10% off your next order. Please consider supporting the Northern Nerd, and thank you for being a nerd. Hey everybody, welcome to the Northern Nerd Podcast. I'm here tonight with one of my childhood buddies. We were co-workers at the go-kart track in Hayward, and now he's living in Cleveland and working for NASA. So JT, how's it going? Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Dalton. It's going well. How are you?
Not too bad. You know, just enjoying grilling out and stuff like that. Last night I grilled out, had some burgers and brats, and watched The Sandlot. So can't ask for much more than that right now.
Yeah, the American dream.
Yep. Living it every day, you know, classic dad line, but just living the dream.
That's right.
Yeah. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Just working from home every single day, trying to get out as much as I can, taking walks and just trying to stay sane in these crazy, crazy times.
Yeah. I suppose it's got to be different living in a city as opposed to living in Hayward. But how has your role changed at work? I know you just mentioned that everything switched to working from home, but are you still able to do quite a bit of stuff from home?
I can pretty much do almost everything I was doing on center at home now. It's a big change, I guess, personally, not so much technologically wise. I have to do everything that I would originally be doing at work at home, but I'm just doing it through a VPN or a virtual private network. So pretty much all of my uploads or downloads from NASA itself are monitored on this private network, and everything is a little bit slower than being on center, but other than the minor inconveniences of downloads and uploads taking a little bit longer, it's not too much different.
Well, that's good to hear. What's the average day like when you're actually able to go to work? What does an average day look like for you?
Yeah, so I usually wake up fairly early in the morning, maybe 6:37. Go walk to the end of my corner, the end of the block. There's a coffee shop I visit every morning with Katie. Buy a cup of coffee and start my day to work. Start my journey to work. Takes about 15 minutes to get there, and then by the time I'm there, I pretty much have a new problem every single day that I'm trying to solve. And I'll spend a lot of time analyzing structures and making sure things aren't going to fail, depending on the loads that are put on certain structures. And I'll make models and make simulations, run the simulations, document the results, communicate those results to other engineers. And then we make informed decisions on how to proceed with our designs or whatever task we're trying to accomplish. And the cycle starts again, but the cycle always starts with a new, interesting problem that I have to solve.
Yeah. So each day presents its own unique and different challenges. And
Yeah, that's correct.
How did you get started with, or what inspired you to go into, engineering or aerospace engineering? Because I remember visiting you a couple of times just from our baseball trips down in Daytona. So Was there something that sparked you as a child to go kind of into that field, or is it more so as you're growing up and going into high school and things like that?
Yes, I've kind of had my eyes set on this path for a really long time. I would say ever since middle school, I kind of figured out that that's the route that I wanted to go on. I was always tinkering with things and trying to figure out how things work. I began taking apart different machines and contraptions, and then not figuring out how to be able to put them back together, just trying to figure out how they work, you know? And so I've always been fascinated with how things work. And one of the things that has really kind of sparked my interest is how things can fly, you know, how we can actually take thousands of pounds worth of vehicle, like an airplane or a spaceship, and how do they fly through the atmosphere? And that's really, really what I was focused on. And that's why I followed down the path that I did. And I have a degree in aerospace engineering, and that's kind of where that stemmed from.
Yeah, man. I just remember thinking back to like our go-kart track days, you wanting to make like this bike that ran off of a chainsaw engine or something like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We found an old broken bicycle leaning up on a dumpster. It had been there for a few days. There's rust starting to accumulate on it. And it was one of the slow days of the track, so we figured me and a few other guys, we had this bright idea. Oh, let's turn it into the equivalent of a dirt bike, but you know, the really home remedied version of
a dirt bike.
So we went to we ended up going to the local junkyard to try to find some kind of motor to put on this thing, and I found a chainsaw motor that did not work whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was all seized up. So we took it back to the go-kart track where we had an abundance of tools and tried to take this chainsaw part, get that working so we could put it on our broken bicycle to try to get the entire system to work. And it involved a lot of problem solving and tinkering. And it was a really enjoyable experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And until that fateful day that we were told that you couldn't work on it anymore, the go-kart track, which...
Oh, you mean that fateful day when we were told that we should be focusing on the go-karts rather than trying to make silly contraptions.
Right. Yeah. What kind of deal is that?
Right.
Doing our job? What? Yeah. Oh, man. Good times. Yeah. The kind of switch gears here. I loved working at the go-kart track. What was one of your favorite things about working at the go-kart track besides having small opportunities to tinker with some stuff before we got caught?
the best part about working at the go-kart track was being able to hang out with some of my best friends pretty much every day of the summer. You know, we would work about 6 days a week.
Yeah.
And so the ways that our shifts were set up, and you know this, but for all your listeners out there, the way that our shifts were set up is that we had three people on a shift, and there was a morning shift and a night shift, and each shift lasted for what was it, like 6.5 hours?
Yeah, 6.5 hours.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, so and every single day, the shift had a different group of people, a different combination of people, but they were all familiar faces because we only had like what, 7 or 8 employees.
Yeah.
So, and everybody was super close with each other. So it was always like showing up to work was kind of the same kind of feeling I get now, where it's, I get to deal with a new problem every day. Well, I get to have a new combination of friends to hang out with today. So it was just kind of always keeps you on your toes with what kind of personalities you're going to interact with and the stories you're going to tell that day or the things you're going to talk about. It was just the diversity of it all.
Yeah.
But also having the connection with familiar faces and good friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't agree more there. And we definitely had some distinct personalities at the go-kart track. That's for sure.
Yes, we did.
I think one of my favorite parts was just the pranks we'd pull on each other. And just like all the rookies always got a bucket of water dumped on them. But then I think you and Joey took it to the next level when we were just had a all out water war one day. It wasn't because any of us were rookies or anything like that, but it was just a hot summer day. And I remember, I think I got Joey with a bucket of water. And that's when you and him Baja'd it through the go-kart track. And I was on bridge. And you guys had no regard for human life at that point and followed me into the field, chasing me down.
I remember when you got him with the bucket of water, he had sworn revenge that day. And I remember that there were plans of him essentially army crawling through the field while go-karts are buzzing around him with a bunch of water trying to sneak up on you to get to you. I think he was found out though. And the end result was us was us chasing you down. We went off course, chasing you down with the go-kart through the field to try to get you good.
I could only imagine what was going through like customers' minds at that time. Just like witnessing all of this had to be a spectacle.
Exactly. I feel like we're doing a little bit of self-incrimination here, but that everything is said and done, it's all
right. Yeah, we're looking back, and I'm sure the people that worked there before us probably did a lot worse than what we did. So, that's just part of the job.
Right.
I also think our victory lap, I mean, while we're self-incriminating ourselves, I think the victory lap was also a highlight of the end of a long night shift.
The victory lap as in the very last go-kart run of the day when all of the employees would race each other.
Yes, that said victory lap. We won't discuss what happened during those victory laps, but that was probably one of my favorite parts as well. Or or the different games we came up with, like as far as bridge game goes with the football and trying to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, not one of our better ideas, but jousting, trying to shut off each other's carts while passing with the mini golf putters.
Yeah, for all of your listeners out there, it's there was a very distinct on-off switch at the back of the go-karts, and it was just big enough and just the right size, really, to be difficult to turn off while you're driving with other go-karts on the track, and trying to turn that off with an extended arm like a golf putter.
That was
a great game.
Yes, many challenges throughout the day, and you know that's how we stayed sane during tourist season. That's what got us by, was those mm-hmm. those little intermissions that we provided ourselves.
Our own entertainment, if you will.
Yes, very much so. I don't think there is a job in Hayward that was more envied than the go-kart track job. Maybe like Tremblay's was a close second, but I feel like we had like the premier job in Hayward.
Yeah, I feel very fortunate to have worked with you and all the other people I got to work with at the place that we had so much fun at.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Matt Heisler if he's listening.
Shout out to Matt.
Yeah. Just because. Shout out to Matt. we still have to convince him to play some games with us or come down to Anglers, because he kept so that we're calling Matt out right now via podcast. He needs to join us next time he's in town.
He absolutely does.
He does. All right. So talking about our days of summer employment, a picture came across my memories yesterday, and it was of our baseball team shoveling off Somerville Field in order to play Ashland that week. And do you remember that day, shoveling off the baseball field, JT?
Yeah, like it was yesterday. There was so much snow, and yeah. I had never spent that much time making sure that a field was so dry. there was probably about a foot of snow still in the outfield, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was a heavy winter.
Yeah, it's well, and right now, I know you're in Cleveland, but right now here in Hayward, like the grass, I don't think it's ever been greener this time of year. And it's just so ironic because we're not able to play baseball right now. So, sorry to bring the podcast down. Didn't mean to be the Debbie Downer, but
you just keep getting foiled.
Yep. Foiled again.
Foiled again.
Yeah.
Megan.
It's the only person I can blame in this time. Megan or Dinkelberg. Those are the only two.
Right.
But, yeah. What have you been doing to keep busy besides work, JT?
Well, I've been trying to go outside as much as possible without interfering with anybody else's ability to survive. Right. So, being that I'm in a more populated area, I have to be fairly conscious of the things I'm touching and the people I'm around and I guess my general awareness of other people around me. And I'm not something that I'm necessarily used to. I don't think that any of us are to this extent.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm trying to really stay away from as many people as I can, but yeah, it's definitely difficult when there's so many people around.
Right.
Definitely nothing like the isolation of the backwoods of Wisconsin or Minnesota, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, like most of the time back when things were normal, it's like isolation was just a thing. Like either you were in town,
right,
or you were home, yeah, and you were very isolated at, yeah, home. So,
right.
Yeah. So
exactly.
To adapt to like the bigger city and just all the people around you and trying to be as mindful as you can. That's gotta be something that's, difficult to adjust to. And not saying like you're always going down the street beforehand, like hugging strangers and stuff like that, like you're in a movie, but at the same, right, time, it's like, yeah, it's just being a lot more, mindful of like, oh, this person's crossing the street because we're walking down the same patch of sidewalk here. And different things,
yeah,
like,
exactly,
that. Like I've even experienced that in Hayward. It's like, all right, I'm a second grade teacher. I'm not that intimidating. I'll move off to the side, but
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Luckily there's a little bit of a trail system, that connect all of the metro parks in Cleveland. The metro parks are essentially just, really green, patches of land that, you know, have a bunch of trees and a bunch of wildlife, squirrels and birds and all kinds of things. And as I'm walking down the trail system and going between the metro parks and stuff, when I'm trying to get some exercise and get out of the house, just this evening today, as I was walking down one of the trails, it was literally just me and somebody coming towards me. And as they were coming towards me, they pulled, a handkerchief over their face just,
oh, man,
to pass me. And it was kind of a situation where I like wasn't prepared for it, but I also, shouldn't have been as surprised as I was to see that. And it was kind of just, the first time I've encountered that specific event. But, yeah, so kind of just a different thought process to get used to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy. Just, what's, I mean, transpired over the past couple weeks, even, it's kind of changed day by day, but,
right.
Cleveland gets a bad rap, for their terrible football team. But, JT, I want you to bring some light to Cleveland here. I want you to give the folks hope. What is there in Cleveland that you really enjoy that maybe the rest of the world doesn't know about yet?
I think the entire area is really, really pretty, honestly. The there was obviously an industrial boom in the northern Ohio area, and all of the architecture and all of the infrastructure that surrounds the Cleveland area represents that and reflects all of the influx of immigration and the workforce at the time of that kind of an industrial revolutionary era. So you have, like, from the mid 1800s to the early 1900s and the 1950s, there's just this collection of different pockets of isolated culture, and it's really, really unique to see that. So you have like a Polish area of Cleveland, and you have an Italian area of Cleveland, a Ukrainian area, people from all ethnicities and nationalities gathering. It's a big melting pot, and you can see the decades and decades of historical time capsules that are the buildings and the infrastructure and the, everything that was used to create that an industrial revolution. And it's really, I think it's just a really pretty area. It has a nice balance of industrial industrial feel with really green, beautiful trees and just a really green environment mixed with old architecture, I think is the coolest part of it.
Yeah. So see, folks, Cleveland isn't all that bad. No, there's some great things about Cleveland. And I want to say it was two summers ago that I visited you there. And just my impression of the city, like just driving in. Well, first of all, I was just trying not to get lost. So I really couldn't take in the area around me when I was coming in. Cause I already missed one of the turns. There was some construction going on. Just when I was able to like park by your guys' house and, just kind of when we went to dinner that first night, just kind of taking in the area that you guys lived in, and you could see that architecture and that history behind the many different buildings that were scattered throughout the city. So that was something really cool to make note of. And also, you only live like a mile or so away from where A Christmas Story was made. So I mean,
yeah, exactly.
If people are into A Christmas Story, like a lot of northern Wisconsiners are, like shout out to Todd Ziegel right now. Todd, if you're listening, I'm here for you, man. That's like a place to definitely check out in Cleveland. Cause I don't know, it's a really unique place and the tour guides do a really good job. So,
So
folks, get off Cleveland's back. That's my point here.
Yeah. I mean, just as an example, the apartment building that I live in now is built in, 1868. The park that I live on the top floor, on the fourth floor, and our windows overlook Lincoln Park, and it's named Lincoln Park because, during the Civil War, the Union Army was actually camped in this park right outside of my apartment building. So there's just tons of history and art and all kinds of really interesting and entertaining things around the city.
Yeah. That's good to know. It's good to know. Does it compare to the beaches down in Daytona? I mean, they're both, it's hard to compare those two because you have like such different, climates and stuff like that, I guess. But
yeah, it's kind of apples to oranges. If we're talking about vacation spots, I mean, obviously Florida is Florida, but
right.
But yeah, I think for places to visit, I think Cleveland has a lot to offer, especially with the arts. I mean, they're very distinguished with their arts and their performance programs. They have a lot of plays, orchestras. The Cleveland Orchestra is one of the highest regarded orchestras in the nation. There are just plenty of things to see here.
Yeah. So folks, once this is all over, maybe plan a trip to Cleveland. Check it out for yourself. I know
absolutely.
Yeah. It was cool to check out Cleveland, then also go to Pittsburgh and just kind of be able to compare the two and things like that. So I would definitely do that again. And plus, So You're Young. Wow, dropping a lot of Hayward names here, but So You're Young. He lives in, I think, I want to say Indiana right now. So can make like a swoop of the old go-kart track crew. That's my summer route.
Yeah.
Just call up all old employees and see where they're scattered throughout the nation and make a road trip out of that.
Yeah, rent a bus.
Yeah.
Bring a whole bunch of people.
Make it happen. We'll have John Don be the lead driver.
There we go.
Nobody's trading off with him. He's the only one driving. The whole way in the short shorts.
That's right.
Look out. Yeah. All right. So going back here to your degree in aerospace, is there anything that surprised you about the field once you got into it? Like something that you weren't expecting?
I guess I was a little bit more surprised when I got in at, so when I got into the industry, I guess I started working at NASA when I was 23. I'm 25 right now. So I've been there for about 2 years. And when I initially started working there, I was a junior in college. And at that point, I was familiar with engineering programs, but I had also been doing a lot of, analytical solutions, problem solving with pencil and paper and writing out equations and coming up with solutions. And, I was really surprised at how the industry relies so heavily, now on programs to be able to solve their problems. And not many engineers nowadays are used to checking their work with analytical solutions with pencil and paper. They rely, I believe, too heavily on programs designed to get them their solution quickly. But with simple assumptions and simple equations, you can check your answers and make sure that things are lining up well. And I was just really surprised that there weren't more pencil and paper solutions, I guess, when I got into the industry.
Yeah. Is it, 'cause that was something that you were used to doing in college at that point?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the bulk of the work that I had done in college was all, pencil and paper, because, I learned the programs. I learned both sides of things, and I assume that, I know for a fact that's why they teach you both sides of the spectrum in college. They teach you how to solve the equations by hand, and they also teach you how to solve them using computer programs. And it's good to have both, because some computer programs most of the time can allow you to solve problems that you never could by hand. They're just way too complex. You can't develop a single formula to solve everything. On the other hand, simpler problems, people don't just solve with pencil and paper. They actually take a longer amount of time to solve with computer programs. So it's definitely a balance. You're supposed to have a balance, I believe. And I was just surprised that there wasn't more of a balance. It's kind of heavily relied upon. We rely upon computers.
Yeah.
Really heavily. And I was just surprised at that.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything looking back now, Now that you've been there for 2 years, is there any project that you can think of and look back on that you've been the most proud of so far, or anything you're at liberty to share with us?
I've worked on some electric motors that are hopefully going to be the most efficient electric motors ever made. They're very, very, very expensive and extremely complicated.
I can imagine.
I worked on, so I'm a structural analyst for NASA, so I make sure that things don't break. So I worked on making sure that the electric motors don't break, and I'm also working on Orion, which is the next spaceship. We're supposed to have boots on the moon by 2024, according to President Trump. So we have been working very hard to try to make Orion the next multi-purpose crew vehicle, or MPCV, a reality. And we're on the verification trail, the verification process now. The verification process for the vehicles, essentially, we're just trying to make sure that this that our analysis is backed up by tests. So we'll test components and test large scale structures of the vehicle and make sure that the vehicle isn't going to break like our analysis said it wouldn't. So that's what we're doing now to kind of wrap this whole thing up. And in parallel, while we're verifying the subcomponents and subsystems of Orion, we're stacking it up and building it up so that we can launch EM1, which is the first best test, the next step that we're taking. We take essentially baby steps, what seem like baby steps, in order to get astronauts in outer space. And we're going to launch this vehicle and make sure that it satisfies all of our analysis and all of our needs successfully without failing.
Yeah, that sounds like some awesome stuff. And I suppose, like, at your guys' level, there's never is there ever a point where you're like, we've done all the tests that we're able to do on this? Or is it something like continually like, test it, keep testing it? And where's the point where you guys say, yep, this is where we're satisfied with this certain project or thing that we're working on?
Yeah. So, the government being the largest bureaucratic system in the world, the United States government, there's regulations on top of regulations and requirements on top of requirements. So essentially ensuring that the spacecraft is safe boils down to a very long, extensive checklist. So all of these procedures that have been built upon, these requirements that have been built upon for about 60 years now, since the Apollo program, they've been designed in such a way to make this process as safe as possible, as safe as manned spaceflight can be. So we do rely heavily on those requirements, and in some cases you just can't meet some requirements, and you essentially have to assess the risk of not being able to meet those certain boxes that you're trying to check. So you write waivers and there's review boards involved, and engineers that are subject matter experts are either signing off on these waivers and making sure that they agree with the risk involved and that you can proceed regardless of what your analysis says. Or sometimes they'll say, no, we need to have more information on this. We don't necessarily accept all of this risk that would be involved if we didn't know all of the answers. So they'll say, we want you to go back and try to test this article again. And in most cases, I mean, we try to get these tests checked off the list in an orderly fashion and base our schedule off of everything being done in an orderly and timely fashion. But sometimes tests get held up and verification deadlines get passed because the problem turned out to be more difficult to solve than initially intended or initially believed.
Wow.
To yeah. be easy. So it's just kind of a whirlwind, and it's all just a mess of paperwork and schedule and timelines and trying to figure out how to get things done on time. Mm-hmm.
So folks, it's not as easy as they make it seem in the movies. That's for sure.
I don't know what movies you're watching, but
yeah.
it's definitely an involved process.
Yeah.
So with something as serious as taking other people's lives in your hand in a vehicle that's meant to do things that other vehicles have never done before, it's definitely involved.
Yeah, that's got to be a lot of pressure and stuff like that. So what are some ways that you find to relax or kind of de-stress after the day is through? What are some things that you find yourself doing to unwind?
I like to, I mean, same as everybody, I guess I play video games and, binge Netflix shows and try to communicate with my friends and family as much as possible and try to get outside, get as much exercise as I can. I find that helps quite a bit.
Yeah. Doing different things to take your mind off. It's got to work wonders, I could imagine.
Right.
Yeah. I think back to, I don't know, just with even college classes and stuff like that, you can stress or you can get so involved into something, then you forget to take care of yourself. So it's important to do that at the same time too. So it's good to hear that you're able to still get outside and do some stuff like that, even if it's in a limited capacity right now. But, I know that you're a big Rick and Morty fan. So, been watching a lot of that.
I haven't watched any of the new season that's been coming out. Just been kind of distracted, actually.
Yeah, it's okay. There's other things to do and stuff going on. Rick and Morty is not priority one, so as much as Pickle Rick would like to be priority number one.
Right. There's definitely a balance between work and relaxation, you know, to find that zen, but it's a little bit more muddled now when you're stuck at home and your home is also your workplace. Right. There's really no separation from work and personal life. So, I'm having a little bit more difficult time now staying away from my work, because previously I could, you know, go to work on things for eight hours a day, come home. And although I would have like a problem kind of stewing in the back of my mind, I could, you know, just take a break and focus on myself. Right. For a little bit when I came home at night. But now it's kind of like I never leave work. It's always here. I could always be running an analysis or trying to figure something out. So
your laptop because is glowing.
Yeah, exactly. It's red hot because I never put it down anymore. But yeah, I'm still trying to find that balance, and it's definitely, there's an adjustment period.
Mm-hmm. I don't think you're alone in that endeavor too. It's hard to, I guess, find this new normal for now because when you come home, you want to be able to kick off your shoes and get something to eat, watch the game or something like that. You're home. But now to have those two intertwined, it just makes it a little bit more difficult to keep that balance and not have it just be that overwhelmed seesaw, but have it at that equilibrium, for as much as you can. But
yeah, exactly.
All right. JT, before we sign off here, I really want to thank you for your time and coming on the show. But I got to know, what is your favorite Coach Heinrich story that you have? For those of you that don't know, while you're thinking of it, for those of you that don't know, Coach Heinrich is a legendary coach here in Hayward, and he coaches basketball and also baseball. And if you grew up here, you know about Coach Heinrich, and he's a great man and an interesting character. And there's just a lot of quotes that he has over the years, and everybody I've come across that's gone through the Hayward School District has a Coach Heinrich story. So JT, I want to know what your favorite Coach Heinrich story is.
Yeah. So my favorite story was, we were playing in an away game. He was our baseball coach. I can't remember if you mentioned that, but, we were playing an away game and everybody's in the dugout because we were batting, and, David Drabeck, another really good friend, got, I think he was on first or second, and whoever was after him, in the lineup batting, they hit like a double or a triple or something. And as David was rounding third base, he took a couple steps past third base and for some reason tripped over, something and just fell and tumbled really hard and got up as he, you know, like the kind of crawling, run that you do when you fall, but you're trying to like hustle as hard as you can to get to home base. That was, you know, his mindset, you know, we got to score this point no matter what. So he got up and he's basically just like bear crawling, and he eventually gets up to his feet and crosses, home base, and he scores for us. And, the entire time, Heinrich was, he was a third base coach, and he was just, you know, yelling at him. And he, after, yelling at him to get going and get home. And as soon as, David comes into the dugout, Coach Heinrich, asked him, he said, "Did you trip over a so-and-so?" And I can't remember the word that he used at the time, but it was a mythical creature that's, apparently as high as your ankle or as high as your knee, and it's invisible. He was asking David if he had tripped over this mythical, invisible, tiny creature as he was rounding third base, and everybody was so confused at him. And it was just one of those things that kind of stuck in my mind and made me laugh.
Yeah. I think one of my favorites was, I want to say this was my junior year, so your senior year, but it was when we were in the gym, and man, it seemed like we practiced in the gym forever, to start off the season. But, Coach Heinrich was talking about like getting in a stance and going like a grouse. And I think, do you remember this? And I think somebody asked, what's a grouse go like? And he goes, and he did like that lip curl with his mustache over his mustache. And like, "You don't know what a freaking grouse runs like." And then he continued to like strut like a grouse in front of everybody in the gym. Man, that's probably my favorite memory.
You don't know what a freaking grouse runs like?
Yeah.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Some good ones, man. Good times. Well, again, I just want to, appreciate you taking the time out to come on the show, and, hope you're doing well and, get through this the best way that you can. And hopefully we'll be able to meet up sometime soon. Whether you're back home here in Hayward or I'm out there in Cleveland, I could always see that museum again. So,
thanks. Thanks for having me. You can bring Todd the next time you come down.
Sounds good. It'll be not Mitch. Just bring Todd.
Right.
You can wait back.
Well, thank you for having me on, sir.
Yeah, not a problem. We'll talk to you later. Thanks for tuning in to the latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast. Feel free to like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to us on Apple Music and Spotify Music so you know when our latest episode of the Northern Nerd Podcast is coming out. That about does it for us, so continue to be kind to one another, and we'll see you around town.